Well, what we know is that there is a new variant around, and it's between 50 and 70% more infective. And we're seeing numbers rise really rapidly, initially in the southeast of England, but we're seeing that spread to other parts of the country now as well. And what that's translating into is higher numbers of people getting infected, but then more people ending up in hospital as well, and NHS services, some of them particularly in and around London, feeling overwhelmed.
The vaccines are with us. What should people do to get a vaccine?
They don't have to do anything to get a vaccine. The NHS will contact them. We're working on the priority list at the moment. It's the over 80s and those in care homes. Care staff and frontline NHS workers are getting them. And we will contact you. But it's really good news that the vaccines are there. We heard that the third vaccine, Moderna, was approved by the MHRA. So that will add a little bit more hope in these dark times.
And what do you say to the people that say, oh, I don't want the vaccine?
What I would say to them is, look, it's really important. The only way out of all of this is getting vaccinated. And we need enough people vaccinated so we can try and return to as much a normal life as possible. And the only way to do that is getting people vaccinated. You've got to do it. Do it for yourself. Do it for your loved ones. Do it for the wider community. I understand that people may have questions, but these vaccines have gone through robust, rigorous trials, the same as any other vaccine before them, and have been approved by the MHRA. That approves any other medicines that you might be taking. So if you're taking any medication, if you've taken paracetamol, ibuprofen, an antibiotic in the past, these have all been approved through the same processes. So there's no reason to worry about this vaccine.
Are there any differences between the vaccines that have been approved?
There's differences in the way they work. So the Pfizer vaccine injects you with a piece of genetic code called messenger RNA. It enters your cells, programs them to start producing a part of the coronavirus known as the spike protein. That's the part that allows the virus to bind with your cells and infect your cells. Once these proteins are made by your body, your immune system recognizes them as foreign and starts attacking them. It will also produce memory cells should you come into contact with the real coronavirus in the future. It will be ready and attack it before it infects you, giving you symptoms. The Oxford AstraZeneca one is slightly different in that they have used a genetically modified virus that causes the common cold in chimpanzees, but is completely harmless in humans. It works in the same way. It enters your cells, programs them to produce these spike proteins, which your immune system then attacks. The Moderna vaccine works in a very similar way to the Pfizer one. Essentially, it causes your immune system to be able to recognize that dangerous spike protein on the coronavirus should you come into contact with it in the future and kill it before it gives you any symptoms.
But it isn't a cure for COVID-19, is it? It's just to prevent it coming to you.
Yes, there's no cure for COVID-19, just like there's no cure for measles or mumps or rubella. You know, we have these vaccines to protect us. So when you do get the virus, if you do come into contact with them, you don't display any symptoms because your body has dealt with it before you feel that you've even had any infection.
We've heard about some scams that are running riot. Why people choose to do this with the vulnerable, I have no idea. But how can you prevent a scam getting to you?
It's absolutely horrendous. The NHS will not knock on your door and ask you to pay for the vaccine. The vaccine is free on the NHS. We will contact you, ask you to come to an NHS centre, or if you're housebound, we will arrange to come to you, but no money will exchange hands. So you mustn't, if anyone asks you for money for the vaccine or says, I can get it for you quickly, you can pay this much, it is nonsense. It won't be the real vaccine. It'll be dangerous. It's a scam. Don't get involved.
And finally, how important is it for people to go along with the government restrictions?
Oh, nothing is more important right now. We're seeing people die in such high numbers, higher than we did in the initial wave of the pandemic. ICU units are full up and down of the country. So it's so, so important that people stay at home, only go out if it's essential, and really just interact with the people in their homes or their support bubble. There are very strict guidance in which you can leave the house. If you can't work from home, if you have a medical need, if you need to shop for essentials, but we need to suppress the virus in the community. We need to get community infections down so hospitals have a time to recover, so we can help other people with other illnesses as well, and we can get schools to reopen. But the only way to do that is to get community infections down, and the only way to do that is by staying at home.
The latest news on the COVID-19 pandemic from Dr. Amir Khan. Well, exercise, of course, is important. And joining us now, Dr. Zoe Williams. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
And just that, exercise, how can we do it when we're bound to stay indoors?
Yeah, so I think there are so many different ways in which people can exercise. And of course, outdoor exercise comes with loads of health benefits, but so does working out indoors as well. And my advice often to people, it depends where you're starting off from. So some people are already very fit and doing lots of exercise, and it's about trying to maintain it. Whereas other people at the other end of the spectrum and haven't done anything for a very long time and don't really know where to start. So my advice is always just start off with a small amount and build it up gradually, and do something that works for you. So for people who are going outdoors, then a 10-minute brisk walk every day is a really good place to start. So, you know, just 10 minutes can give you lots of physical health benefits and really help your mental health as well. But for people who are staying indoors, then anything that involves moving the body ideally gets your heart rate up a little bit. And that can be simple things like lifting up some tins of beans whilst you're waiting for the kettle to boil, or doing a few squats when the adverts come on TV, or just standing up if you're working from home, you know, standing up and doing some stretches once an hour, setting a reminder on your phone to do that. Everything that involves moving the body, it counts. And it's not just good for your physical health, it's good for your mental health as well.
Now, many of our listeners are in the category of older and possibly vulnerable. So will that apply to them as well?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think exercise is the one thing that applies to everybody. And, you know, depending on where you're starting off from, it's just doing a little bit more than you were doing yesterday is proven to give you health benefit. So, of course, you know, some people have been asked to shield again. So that might involve some of your listeners, particularly people if they're living with certain chronic conditions. There's a really good website called We Are Undefeatable. And that is a campaign that was launched a couple of years ago now by 15 health and social care charities here in the UK with support from Sport England. And it's all around recognising that for some people, especially if they've got painful conditions or other health conditions, then the moving and physical activity can be challenging. But also actually people in those groups still want to be active. They want to be as active as they can be. And often those people report that they're more motivated to get active than the general population. So that website has lots of ideas and resources to support people to get active in their own home in a way that is, you know, it's easy for them to achieve it despite maybe having certain conditions such as arthritis. Arthritis UK have a load of resources as well, as do the NHS on the Better Health website. So lots of things that people can do inside or outside to stay active and to build muscle strength. One of the things I've noticed as a GP in many of my older patients is actually they've lost strength during the past 12 months, because even, you know, things like getting out once a day to go to the shops, that doesn't sound like a lot, but actually, you know, small amounts of physical activity like that really do count and are really important for maintaining muscle strength. So in people who are now staying at home and not having their daily trip to the shops, it's important to do something else instead. So, you know, a few squats or standing up and down out of the chair 10 times a day, things like that can make a huge difference to maintaining strength.
You're talking about going out. If people do go out, how important is it for them to wear a mask?
Well, if you're going, it depends what you're doing when you go out. So if people, of course, wearing the mask is mostly to protect other people in case you yourself are infected. Although, you know, there's a chance it might provide a barrier and provide some protection for the wearer as well. So if you're going out of the house and you're going to stay outdoors and you're not going to be coming into close contact with other people, say, for example, if you live in a fairly remote area that's not densely populated and you're going for a walk in your local area in the local park and you're not going to come into contact with others, then people don't need to wear a mask, especially if people have conditions that mean that they feel breathless, then wearing a mask might be less comfortable. But actually, if people are happy to wear a mask and comfortable to wear one, then, you know, there's an argument for saying just always pop one on, because one of the things I think it does as well, it sends a message to people that you do come into contact with that you're protecting them, and therefore, you know, you expect in them to reciprocate and do the same to protect you. So it almost sends a signal to people, you know, don't get too close, keep that 2 meter distance. I'm respecting social distancing and keeping myself and others safe, and I expect you to do the same. It also keeps your teeth nice and warm when it's cold outside at the moment.
So you mentioned a couple of websites. Can you repeat them for us?
Yes. Yeah, so the Better Health website, which is an NHS website, that's nhs.uk/betterhealth. And on there are a load of resources for exercise, but also if people are looking to improve their diet, looking to reduce their alcohol intake, looking to quit smoking or lose weight, there are a load of resources and apps available on there. And the other one that I mentioned was We Are Undefeatable, and that's around physical activity, especially for people who are living with long-term conditions.
Finally, Doctor, everybody, of course, wants to know when they're going to get their vaccine and are desperate to not ring their local surgery or the NHS. So should they just wait?
Yeah, I know it's frustrating because everybody wants to know, but I think, you know, as a GP, our admin staff and reception staff are quite overwhelmed at the moment with a lot of inquiries about the vaccine. And actually, we don't know before you do. So yeah, the advice really is to just sit tight and wait. And, you know, as soon as you get that call to go and get the vaccine, go and get your jab.
But you're confident we're on our way out of this?
I am. You know, the next few months, sadly, I think could be the hardest months that we've faced. I think the situation right now with the NHS being under pressure, it is concerning. It's a real worry, especially because it's going to get worse before it gets better. But, you know, this is the final stretch, so to speak. The vaccine is our way out of this. And by summer, you know, I would be optimistically say hopefully by Easter, I would hope that we're looking to start to get things a little bit more back to normal. And, you know, most important thing is being able to see the people that we love again. So, you know, I'm just so grateful that we do have the vaccination programme in place now, and we're not approaching a year of being under restrictions in this pandemic without any light at the end of the tunnel. So it's the final stretch, but I think it's going to be the hardest stretch, unfortunately.
Dr. Zoe Williams. I'm sure people remember in an earlier programme, we talked to railway enthusiast, architect enthusiast, and generally good guy, Tim Dunn. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well. And a new series of the stunning architecture on our railways.
Yeah, I mean, what a treat to be back for a second series. I think the first one went down very well, and people realised that actually there are some beautiful things to look at, and actually this is joyful television, and it's fascinating television because it's just showcasing wonderful, wonderful things.
And where are you going on this new series?
Well, it's about 40 places across 10 episodes, which again, especially during a year, we've had some pretty horrific sort of lockdowns and curbs on travel. We have managed to get around the place between those times and explore those things. So we go from the West Country, everything from the Royal Albert Bridge at Saltash over the River Tamar, up to Weems Bay in Scotland. right the way across to perhaps to Southend Pier in Essex. And then in Europe, of course, because I always say that railways don't end at the Channel Tunnel. We go up into the Arctic Circle and see how railway stations are built in the snow, and then down to the south of Portugal as well. So we're going all over, whether it's a station or an engine shed, a signal box, or even a tunnel. We try and explore a real variety of places.
It all sounds magical, and it's not just the grand stations and buildings either.
Oh, no, no. This programme is all about trying to discover things that maybe people didn't necessarily know. So, we have some grand stations in here, of course, and we have some magnificent stuff, whether it's the Windsor Royal Stations or Bath Spa Station or Bristol Temple Meads. But actually, we go and find some of the less well-known ones. So we go and look at maybe Wolverhampton, because that's fascinating too. And then go and look maybe at South Wingfield Station, which is a now disused station up in Derbyshire, which is I thought had been demolished actually a few years ago, but it hasn't. It's a fabulous station, hidden now in the woods, gently just mouldering away, but it's one of the world's first railway stations, designed by Francis Thompson, this classical style, almost Greek, actually, looking at it. And we go and discover it, and we get to be shown inside it, and they take all the protective layers off it, and all of the metal shutters off and grills off it. And we go inside and we go and see their plans to transform it back into a community space. It's glorious.
And of course, a lot of stations on even closed lines have been turned into private residences, some more sympathetically than others. Do you go to any of those?
Oh, I was trying to think, actually. We actually go to one, which is not a residence, but we go and look at, in one episode, we go and look at the Linton and Barnstaple Railway, which was a narrow gauge railway built through Devon and up to the north coast, trying to open up an area which became known as Little Switzerland because of its architecture and incredible cliffs and this feeling of mountains and fir trees that they have up in the area. And actually, we go to a pub which has been created out of one of the railway's former railway stations. We go and meet the publican here and the landlord who looks after it, and we see how the building has been changed from being this little sort of Swiss chalet style station into a very successful pub. We don't go and look at necessarily this time round. We did last year some disused sort of things with the exception of the residences, but one that really sort of surprised me was there's a railway that runs through Somerset called the Somerset and Dorset Railway. Again, most of it is long gone now. But Bath Green Park, which is its big terminus in the city centre at Bath, has remarkably survived in the car park at Sainsbury's. And it's been used as a giant Sainsbury's car park. And they've retained this huge overall roof that's a great railway terminus. And it is now being used as a farmer's market and series of cafes and restaurants. And again, getting to explore that and going into the vaults beneath it with its narrow gauge railway that you use to transport wine around underneath is fascinating. So seeing how things have been repurposed, as you say, sympathetically, is genuinely fascinating.
And do you think we've now gone away from the philosophy of knock it down, it's old?
Yeah, absolutely. I think whilst we can never save everything, and we shouldn't try and save everything old, because I remember our railways are infrastructure, they're not there as a museum, we should try and find uses for things where we possibly can that enhance the customer experience and that are important to save. Yeah, generally, I think we have got to a point now where we are trying to save the best of the past and make way for better stuff in the future. So, yeah. You know, there have been some travesties where we have lost stuff that we shouldn't have done. And perhaps with our heads on now, if we think about it, even from an environmental perspective, we think about reuse and sustainability. Think about destroying a building. Building something brand new actually is extremely carbon intensive and actually is detrimental to the environment. So many times it's best to try and reuse what we've already got.
And is this programme just for the railway enthusiasts?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, being a railway enthusiast myself, it has to pass the test. You know, would I enjoy this? and would my dad enjoy this? And would my friends enjoy this? Absolutely, yes. But also has to pass the test for me as, would my mum enjoy it? And would my friends enjoy it, who aren't railway people? And this programme, yes, it's about railways, somewhat. Actually, that's what connects everything. Really, it's about brilliant, interesting buildings and having private tours to show you something remarkable and intriguing and fascinating. Because we look at railway hotels that are near a railway, run by the railway, but actually it's all about the glamour of the hotel rather than the trains. So actually we have a real cross-section of beautiful, interesting designs. So one episode, we look at some of these tiles in the station and Delft-style stations in Portugal, and we go and talk to people who love this stuff. But every episode, every story has got, you know, so 4, 5, 6 people in it who really want to showcase what is fascinating about the style of a building or a city and how it represents their town. And actually, so really, it's a series of wonderful stories about people's private passions and what they really love. And perhaps I hope it inspires people to stop off next time they're on a train, when we can, and stop off, maybe take 5 minutes just to look at a building and go, why does it look like that? Why is that shaped like that? And go, ah, oh, maybe I'll just stop off briefly and look at that instead. Or I'll grab a coffee there. Or I'll just take a diversion on my normal route to work and look at that.
It all sounds wonderful. And I can't wait to watch it. And on that subject, where can our listeners catch it?
Well, it can be caught every Tuesday night for the next 9 weeks on the Yesterday Channel, which is on Freeview, and also it's on UK TV Play and various catch-up things as well. I think it's being repeated throughout the week on Yesterday Channel. But yeah, it's every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and every Tuesday night it's 3 or 4 stories of fascinating, wonderful things with really, truly lovely people.
And finally, Tim, have you got a favourite place that you've either been to or not yet been to?
Oh, what a question. Oh, wow. Crikey. I think one of my favourites is probably Bristol Temple Meads. Going, in fact, we've gone to the very top of the roof and explore it, you know, from top to bottom, looking at Brunel's original sort of Tudor-style station through to the more recent Art Deco bits. The stuff I haven't yet been to that I really want to go and take cameras to. I actually do want to come to Brighton Station. Makata, who is the architect behind it, designed it in a really unusual sort of Italian style. I really want to come and bring a camera down to Brighton Station. So fingers crossed we get to do that in a future series.
We were joined by railway historian Tim Dunn, who was telling us all about the second series of his programme on the subject of railway architecture that you can catch either live on Tuesdays on Yesterday Channel. That's 129 on Virgin, 155 on Sky, 26 on Freeview, and 158 on Freesat, etc., etc., all at 8 p.m. Or you can catch up on UK TV, as Tim was telling us. Now, many of our listeners will remember the sadly missed Meals on Wheels service. Well, Age UK, West Sussex, Brighton and Hove are reconfiguring it in a way in Brighton and Hove, but certainly outside of the city, particularly in West Sussex. And joining us now to tell us all about it is Claire Long. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. And tell me, this a new initiative?
It is indeed. I mean, obviously, we've been supporting the over 50s across West Sussex and Brighton and Hove consistently throughout this pandemic. But we've received some specific funding from West Sussex County Council for the period of 1st of December through to the end of March, which has, you know, bolstered our ability to reach out to, you know, the most vulnerable amongst us. Being at home, you know, heating might be a worry, just keeping warm, keeping well, keeping active, keeping well fed. You know, information, advice about all of these things is something that we're very well placed to support. And there are a number of partners that we work with in Brighton and Hove who are delivering food. And it's also something that we're supporting ourselves with. Anybody that's concerned, we're here for you this winter.
What exactly are you doing and how do people get in touch?
So there's a number of ways that we can help people. That might be through providing information over the telephone. It might be befriending support. So if people are particularly lonely or isolated, they can contact us and join those services. We are still doorstepping. So we've got some lovely volunteers going out to individuals, taking out our bags of support. We've got magazines, activity packs. We're supporting, you know, emergency medication. Perhaps people don't have a regular delivery set up with their pharmacist, and we can certainly help you with that. And then in terms of food, we're obviously now in much tighter restrictions again. And we're hearing that supermarkets are either very busy or people can't get slots. People are not necessarily being encouraged to go out and about as much as they were. So we're keen to help people make sure that, you know, they're not going without this winter. And then certainly in terms of energy advice, you know, obviously we're spending more time at home. Our bills might be going up. You know, there are things that we can do to keep warm, to keep hydrated and to keep well. And that's the message that we're giving out, that, you know, we're very much still here for you, whatever your circumstances might be, and to please get in touch.
What about face-to-face services that Age UK is well known for?
No, that's a really good point. And obviously the restrictions at the moment mean that we cannot be encouraging face-to-face meetings. We've got some fabulous volunteers who are still, you know, doorstepping and can, you know, a nice cheery hello or what have you from a safe distance. But certainly in terms of as services, as soon as we are allowed to safely, you know, encourage some of the more social activities that I know people enjoy and associate with us, we will do so. Our dementia services are able to continue to be supported under the restrictions, but unfortunately many others are not able to. But just as soon as we can, we're following the guidelines, you know, regularly and updating what we're able to do in line with those guidelines. So we want to reassure people, though, that we are still here for you. And whether that be, as I say, over the telephone or, you know, a doorstep visit, then that's something we can absolutely still do.
And how can people do just that, get in touch?
They can call us on 01903 731 800, or if they're online and they'd like to email, they can email us at info@ageukwsbh, that's Age UK West Sussex, Brighton & Hove, .org.uk.
Claire, thanks very much for joining us this morning, and keep safe and well.
Thank you, and you.
We were joined by Claire Long from Age UK West Sussex, Brighton & Hove. We're all familiar with the benefits that fresh air and being out in nature, a walk along the seafront or over the downs in our neck of the woods. But what sort of impact does colour have on our mood, our thoughts and our productivity? And joining us with Zoom is Alison Standish, a colour therapist. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
And just, you know, a simple question. How can colour affect us?
Recently, there's been a research that says 43% of us think particular colours have an effect on our productivity, and about 57% affect our moods. And we know from lots of scientific information that light affects us. And when we go into these darker days of winter, we may feel a little bit more downbeat than we have done during the summer. So colour is light broken down into different wavelengths. And so therefore, we know that light affects us, so therefore colours affect us as well. So different colours have different effects on our body. 25% of what we look at through our vision is for us to see colour, but actually 75% goes down into our body and works with all our organs.
The colour of the wall in your office, if you're working at home like we are, how can that make a difference?
Because when you're looking at the colour or you're absorbing the colour through your skin, it is a frequency. And we are affected by sounds, we're affected by lights, we're affected by heat. So we are also affected by colour. So if you have painted your room in purely red, you may start to feel that the red increases your energy. It actually increases your blood pressure very slightly. It increases your heart rate. So that's why we call it the colour of passion.
So how can we improve our health with colour?
Having a balance of all the colours around us, which is actually effectively like having light, can actually help us feel much more in tune with ourselves. So we need a whole sequence from the red all the way through the rainbow to the violets, and that will help us actually to keep ourselves in balance. And we can do that by having it in our homes, having it in our environment.
As we get older, does it make a difference, the colour?
Well, I think of my grandparents and especially my nan, who was very colourful. So she got more colourful as she got older. And actually with she felt much more uplifted. So there's definitely value in actually having colour around as you get older. Maybe we don't see quite the same colours as we would do if we were children, because the fact that the muscles in our eyes slightly change, but we still absorb all of that colour. So I feel like the more colour, the merrier as we get older.
And how can colour help us generally with our surroundings and our well-being?
If you pick, for example, the colour yellow, yellow is a digestive. So we find that quite a lot of kitchen items and places in the kitchen may have yellow because they help us to actually digest. So if you want to actually have good digestion, then you could incorporate maybe yellow cups to drink water out of a glass. You could have yellow in cushions or throws around, and that would balance, for example, your stomach area. If you want to deal with feeling more calm and relaxed, then you need the greens. As they say, going out in nature and breathing is really important. So the colour green opens our lungs and gives us a much more opportunity to have oxygen.
Where can people go to get more information generally?
I run a company called The Colour Ministry, so you can go to the Colour Ministry website and find more information on the sequences as well as just general colour information.
We're hearing from Alison Standish, who runs an organisation called The Colour Ministry from a home in Worthing. And if you'd like to find out more, you can contact Alison by going to their website. Just put Colour Ministry into Google or whichever browser you use. And that just about brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's brought to you by Brighton's local radio station, Radio Reverb. We're broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital radio with DAB+, online at radioreverb.com. And so until next time we meet over the airwaves, it's goodbye from me. However, don't forget that my co-presenter Richard Davis will be here with his next edition in a couple of weeks. It's just time for me to say goodbye, and of course to remind you, for the past hour you've been listening to At Home This Morning, which is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb. And so until we next meet over the airwaves, or however you listen, this is Chris English signing off as usual with please keep safe, keep warm, and of course, stay home, protect the NHS, and save lives. Bye for now.